the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Charlie McCarron.
I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
And this is our third in our Engine Builder series. And for this one, I knew I wanted to pick Sprocket Forge by our very own Ananda. And I'm introducing this one just because Ananda didn't necessarily want to pick his own game, but I am...
He was actively uncomfortable with us picking his game,
yep, so
just for clarity there.
I'm forcing it, though, because this is your first published game, so
yes.
Congrats.
Thank you.
With Sophisticated Cerberus Games. And as the introducer, I'll give you the high-level overview, and I'm sure I'll forget a few rules here. So we are crafting magical artifacts in the city of Sprocket Forge. And I'm going to try to describe this game very visually because it's visually very fun. You have gears. It's all about the gears. And five gears, imagine that there's one in the middle and four around the outsides that they actually connect and spin. And there's six slots on each gear. And whichever slot is facing you on each of these gears is the items that you'll produce. And so there's like these gear slots that you're actually putting in so cardboard pieces that tell you, for example, oh, this one has stone, fire, and something else around the gear. So you'll only have one active gear to start, two?
At the start of the game, you have two gears. Well, they're called enchant. The bits inside the gear are called enchantments. But basically, yeah, you have two gears.
Okay, yes. So the gears get enchanted by cardboard pieces that you're drafting. That part of it's really cool. Love that. And there's also upgrades.
They're called seals.
Seals, thank you.
But yes,
you know,
they're upgrades.
You gotta have those magical terms.
Yeah.
Seals, which are hex pieces that go inside those enchantments. And this is like why the engine building is really fun, because you have the combination of how your enchantments are lining up and how your seals are lining up with them too, because within those hexes, there's some like basic useful actions and connection points that also line up. Just also look up a picture of this as I'm explaining it too, because that's part of it. So the other piece of the game is that you are basically fulfilling orders in a way, but getting the right combo of
mana
to fulfill these magical contracts.
They're called orders.
Orders, okay, yes.
These mystical, magical orders.
Orders, yes. Yeah.
Requests from different customers. Types of people.
From the nobles, the
merchants.
And
the commoners.
Yeah. Basically like three tiers of cards. Additionally, one of the other cool things is, so every time, you kind of have to make your
factory
sustainable, because there's also when you complete one of these orders, all the mana you use gets put in your exhaust. Like, you could think of it like
the pollution
coming out of your chimney.
Got that earth pollution.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's a fun interaction in terms of between the other players. You can actually recycle from their factories and take some of the mana.
I'm not sure if you said this already, but there are four different types of mana, and you know, fire, earth, air, and water. And your orders require a combination of them.
Yes.
Yeah. And once you fulfill an order, you also get points and another bonus, which might be upgrading a gear, which is actually like an enchantment. You flip it over, and it's even better.
Reforging.
Reforging, yes. And you also can draw a favor card.
Which are like love letter. Favor cards.
Yes, they look like, imagine a love letter type.
Card back.
They're 1 to 3 points. And then you can also use an action to petition these nobles. And if your factory is very green,
very and clean,
low pollution, you'll get a chance at getting a higher point value one there. So it sounds like a lot, but it actually, once you get going,
yeah,
it's really nice. And the thing I haven't explained yet is how what you actually do for your actions on your turn, which is you can either produce, which is gain stuff from your enchantment gears, or plan, which is remove some of your pollution and then take order cards, or you can petition. That's the trading in your favorite cards for better ones if your factory is not very dirty. Additionally, when you take your action, everyone else can follow. And I think that's really nice in this, that you, it's very much simultaneous play in terms of follow actions. Something. You get a little bonus, obviously not as good as the main action.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. That's basically.
In a nutshell.
And then at the end, you turn your gears. That's the end of your turn.
Yep. At the end of the turn.
Yes. Your gears turn every turn.
Yep. And you can usually also use a follow action from someone else to turn your gears.
Yes. So if you don't want to do the actual.
Yep. Which is sometimes useful if, on my board in the game we played, I had one sector of my gears that was incredibly powerful, and close to the last round, I did use a couple of follow actions to line it up so my last turn would be just executing on that super awesome sector, where all of my best symbols were.
Yeah, because when you produce, you always produce on the bottom of the gear.
Yeah.
And so, like, you want to make sure they all are at that good point on the bottom, but you're also, like, destroying the enchantments on gears. Yeah. Reforging them and moving them. So, like, you might lose track of what is actually going to be the optimal one if you're not paying close attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely messed that up a couple of times.
Well, and you can engineer things so that on a future turn when you predict you're going to produce, you get exactly what you need.
Right.
Yeah. And I've played many versions of this game, which have all been fun in different ways. But this, finally playing the published version, is like, everything flows really nicely,
yeah,
very slick. But yeah, interesting to see it evolve over time. But I think I feel like all versions that I've played had the five gears, maybe. Did it start for you?
So the number of gears has changed over time. The earliest versions, I think they went up to six gears.
That sounds like something I remember.
Oh, yeah, because you had six gears plus little, like, in between tiny gears.
Right, to make them all rotate the same direction. And then I decided, okay, we'll just have one gear that rotates the wrong direction because we don't need extra parts.
Yeah.
Yeah, which in this play of it didn't really matter too much for me because it was like every other one was the
same. I had
the
same
setup.
Which is
kind of nice for the middle gear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I think I've talked about this game before.
I think we brought it up a couple times.
Yeah.
In the podcast.
So I obviously have already said a little bit, but you know, you guys just played it.
I think for me it's cool to see also how you did the action system. In the end, because I remember you had, it wasn't as clean of like, I do one of three actions.
Yes.
Remind me, what were some of the different versions of that and why you ended up switching to It's like simpler.
Yeah, well, I remember for a while there was a wheel in the middle, and you would rotate the wheel to determine your action and also, I think, also the action that other people would follow.
Oh, interesting.
That was kind of weird. Very early on, I think it was just choose one of these actions, but there weren't follows for it. For a while, the game was simultaneous, so everyone could choose their action at the same time. And then it switched to being turn-based, and I discovered that it's not much fun to be waiting for your turn. Obviously, you know, very common problem, downtime.
Yep.
And the follow system was introduced to fix that, and it's a pretty simple fix. It turns out you don't need to give players very much to keep them engaged when it's not their turn.
Oh, yeah, a simple choice of do I turn my gears or do I get this one resource?
Yeah. Honestly, you don't even need to give them a choice.
Yeah.
If you look at games like Machi Koro or Space Base, well, I guess Space Base has a little bit of a choice, but
marginally, yeah.
If you look at Machi Koro, for example, or Catan, you don't have choices when it's not your turn. But just getting something keeps players engaged, even if they're not making a choice.
That's true. Yeah, if it's been like a few minutes with you not doing anything, you're just kind of sitting there, zoning out, waiting for your turn. And like, oh, you get the, oh, I got a thing. Oh, great. Oh, now I have this.
Yeah.
Oh, that changes my next turn. Okay.
Yeah. And the follow action is nice because it actually matters what they pick on their turn.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Like, yeah, versus Machi Koro is like, oh, roll the dice, and then whatever the dice are, sure, I get something. It's like, oh, I actually care about what you do as your action.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, and if you're paying attention to your opponents in this game, you can definitely trip them up or make sure that they can't benefit from the follow.
Hmm.
Because like, if they have very low exhaust, for example, that and their cards are full, then you know they're not going to benefit much.
I was big on that.
Yeah, from following on a plan action. And if they have too much exhaust, then they can't benefit from following a petition.
Oh, that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we played the advanced game.
Yes, I was going to mention that too.
The game has a basic mode and an advanced mode, and the advanced mode has changes that look quite well. You get faction powers. The other changes don't appear that well, or I guess I don't know what your impression of them is. But on the page, they don't seem like they're that much, but it actually makes a very big difference. Because the big change between, I would say maybe the biggest change between the advanced game and the basic game is that in the basic game, when you follow the produce action, you get one mana of any type. In the advanced game, you only get mana from an active symbol on your gears, which means in the advanced game, lining up your gears for future turns becomes much, much more important. Because you can't rely on free wild mana all the time, like you can in the base game, in the basic game.
Yeah. And so advanced mode, we each had an asymmetric power. Actually, kind of like a few of them that feel like they combo together, obviously.
And some were like slightly negatives and some were positives. So it's like almost like your drive to like prevent bad things.
Yeah, all of the factions have something they're bad at and something they're very good at.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, for example, mine, it's interesting because mostly everyone else could do their orders in any order. I had to do my orders in a certain order left to right. Or suffer a penalty if I don't.
You actually lose orders if you jump ahead in the queue.
Mm-hmm.
And points.
Yeah. So I definitely tried to do them all in order. And I like that, I remember I played a version where that was the rule of the game. But it's like, you can reuse this idea that you threw away for the main game and make it advanced game because it is harder.
Yeah, that is a great source. If you're doing a game and it's going through lots of changes, that is a great source that you can mine for special faction abilities. Is just look at stuff you threw away and make that an ability that one faction has.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's like super easy way to get ideas.
Yeah.
Yourself from years ago.
Yeah. I think actually that might be my takeaway for this one of how different our powers were as the asymmetric factions, because it makes me want to play again and try what the heck was Trevor doing over there. His was all about like trashing stuff.
Yeah, from destroying my enchantments and
yeah.
It was interesting. I really liked it. And I had some more flexibility with the enchantments and like with elements stored on them. I didn't use it as much as I should have. Mm-hmm. I should have gotten more storage based enchantments so I could store more elements and then use those.
Yeah.
But I, you know, kind of missed that. I was trying a different strategy for a while too, and that slowed me down in my engine. And it's like, yeah, that's just kind of learning these games, you know? It's like there's a lot of fun ways that you can pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And my faction was very straightforward, the kobolds. Basically, they like to recycle stuff, and they get fewer points for noble orders, so they'd rather complete a bunch of merchant orders.
Right.
Although some noble orders may still be necessary. And they have, I think, quite a good faction production symbol. Each faction has their own special production symbol that does something different. The kobolds can recycle 2 mana from their own exhaust. So like it's both cleaning up their exhaust and giving them mana for completing orders. Mm-hmm. So if you just spam that on your gears, you can get quite a nice engine going.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot my my ability like that would have been great for having more storage as well, because then I can just clear all of my stored elements and produce with it or put them into my mana pool, which like, yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah.
But that's what you like about engine builders is after you play it, you come back to it. It's like, oh, I had all these things I was doing last time. Let me try this time.
Yeah.
And as long as your game can actually do that, then you have a good game, because then like people want to come back and experience it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe also don't be afraid to add restrictions on players in this. For example, like with the asymmetric factions, yes, you do get a bonus, but you have a restriction that really gives you a challenge.
And I'm not used to having restrictions for asymmetry, I'm realizing.
And maybe also because it's you're mostly doing your own personal thing, it's nice to have a restriction. Because if it was more of an interactive game, maybe restrictions feel worse.
Well, if other players are your restriction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But making this the advanced mode is like clear, oh, it's going to be harder, prepares people for it.
Yeah. Well, one of the challenges with having restrictions on variable player powers is that when you give someone a bonus, then they're rewarded for, you know, remembering that. Mm-hmm. But when you give someone a penalty, it's something they have to remember, but it's also a bad thing.
Yeah.
Right, so there's no reward for remembering. It's work without reward, which is bad.
Which I think this works in yours because it's so key to how they worked out. Like mine was clearly changed my entire how I'm playing the game of like these orders have to be completed in this order. Yeah. I'm not going to really screw that up.
Yeah.
And honestly, like there were times that I did not use the thing I'm supposed to do every turn. So I took negative points. It's like, I was weighing them in my head. Like, okay, is it worth taking the hit this turn or should I try and figure out a way to do it? Yeah. And I think like having that extra piece of the puzzle is really nice. Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me a little bit also of Planet Unknown, how they do that, where, you know, the base version of it is you just play with the basic planet, but all the planets have a backside that has some harder rules. And that one, you know, I asked Adam about it, of Adam's Apple Games, and he wasn't actually too concerned with trying to balance them all, because the idea is it is meant to be harder version of a planet for each player. And I thought the other thing we had talked about with him was like, you know, maybe someday there could be like a Planet Unknown scoreboard online where it's like you enter in which planet you did and which tech you took or industry, whatever the second board is called, and just like enter your points and see how you did compared to everyone else who had that exact setup.
Oh, sure.
Rather than comparing, you know, like maybe you lost the game against someone who had the base mode.
You don't want to compare apples to atoms. Wait, that's...
So maybe that could be a Sprocket Forge thing too. Like,
yeah.
But ideally, I think you guys spent more time making sure these were balanced with each other.
Yeah, I mean, the sophisticated Cerberus did most of the balancing of the factions.
Yeah. But it was, I mean, Trevor and I, very close game.
Yeah, yeah, 2 points apart from each other.
There's no question Ananda was going to win at this game.
There was a point where we were all tied. We held it for...
I was behind for...
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
At the beginning of the game.
And they're like, oh, yeah, now I just do this, 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 and 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 this. It's like, oh, God, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So another aspect of this game that I guess maybe we haven't talked about is the disenchanting mechanic, which is the game... I mean, you mentioned this a bit with your faction.
Right.
The game lets you deconstruct your engine. Mm-hmm. You can blow up your gears for a short-term gain.
Right.
And that's... I mean, how do you feel about that in an engine builder, about blowing up your own engine?
I'm always hesitant. Like, even with, you know, deck builders, I'm always hesitant to trash cards if I purchased it. You know? Base cards, sure. But, like, I'm always a little wary. But as I got more used to doing it, especially my faction can... disenchant multiple gears in a single turn to get more benefits, and they also want to disenchant every turn. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, that makes sense, but I was still hesitant to do it. And I started to see the benefit at the very end, and then I shot myself in the foot. So that's what you do.
I think it's a cool choice to be able to, get rid of something for a really good short-term benefit.
Yeah.
Because in this one, it's really important that you... like use your mana in that turn that you have, because you can't really store it up.
You can't bank it in your pool. It goes onto
the gears itself. Didn't actually say that too. So there's like storage spaces on the gears, but you then would have to time it out where these extra mana
or have a faction ability that lets you use them.
Or that too.
Yes. Yeah, that's actually a really key part of the game, is the timing aspect to it, which it was always the case that timing mattered, but not in necessarily the way it does now. So the whole reason that it works is because you are only allowed to store mana by putting it on specific sectors of gears, where you only get it back when they come around. So you need to get the mana you need for an order all at the same time. If you didn't have that restriction and you could just hold mana from turn to turn, then there wouldn't really be a game. It wouldn't matter that the
timing.
It wouldn't matter that the gears are changing every round, because it's just like it's feeding you this mana over time, and you're eventually going to get what you need. It's the fact that you can't save it that makes the different sectors of the gear matter.
Right.
That is key to the design. Early on in the design, the timing puzzle was instead that gears both consumed and produced mana.
Oh,
so you needed to make sure that you produced the mana that a gear needed on the turn when it needed to consume it. otherwise, the gear would blow up.
Yeah.
And you'd lose it. And that wasn't very fun.
Seems interesting, but frustrating in the same breath.
Yeah, I think this thinking about... So far, all the engine builders we played Wormspan, Studies in Sorcery, and Sprocket Forge here. They all have like a good amount of tension in terms of like, oh, I really need to do this right now.
Mm-hmm. The urgency, yes.
Yeah. And maybe that's a lesson for game designers who are making engine builders, is like, it's easy to have your engine run away and then everything's so easy.
Yeah.
You're gaining a ton of stuff and you're buying whatever you want. And
make 30 gold a turn.
Yeah. Okay. It's like, okay, cool. But doesn't have the tension anymore. So like, how can you keep the tension going? Ratchet up the amount of cool things you're doing, but also like keep the tension of, oh, I need to do this now.
And this feels like a takeaway.
Yeah, even though Charlie already
said it. Second takeaway, I guess. Yes.
Well, my takeaway was actually going to be the fact that you don't have to clear, like, spend element or spend your resources off of your board when you do things. You can actually just shift them on your board to another area, which is what the exhaust is.
Yeah. Send them from one thing to another thing.
Yeah, it converts it into another thing, which actually gives it to act like in this instance, when things are in your exhaust, then that means other people have access to it. And so you're actually, it's very similar to like, you know, follow actions as well. Like if I do this, they can do that too. So do you have that as part of what you're doing in your decision tree? Or is it like, oh, hey, you know what? I'm just worried about myself and I'm just going to worry about what my things are. Because there was a point where I accidentally messed up Charlie's plan by just not having Earth in my exhaust. Yeah. And I just had mostly just water because that's what my focus was.
Yep.
Yeah.
And like it's just really interesting. Like you don't have to spend a resource and put it back into the bank. You could just convert it into something else and have that be usable again in some way.
I think that's a really good point. It actually we talked about this a bit, I think, with Indonesia.
Yeah.
But I do really like systems where the cost of something isn't just it goes back to the bank.
Yeah.
We talked about this in the context of auctions specifically.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Like auctioning back to the bank versus auctioning somewhere else, like in Indonesia, it just becomes points when you spend it. But that doesn't just have to be for auctions. I think in most games, you can come up with something more creative to do than giving something back to the bank.
Right.
Like just move it to a different zone and that's the cost.
Yeah. And that zone does something new with it. And that plays with it in a new way. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember, what is it called? Terra Mystica.
Oh, yeah.
Has that honestly very weird system with the bowls that you move the pieces between. There's three bowls and...
But magic.
Yeah. That... I still do not understand what that is about.
it's weird.
It's a little weird.
It's fun.
I guess...
Yeah.
Those aren't exactly the same thing because I don't think it matters where they are except that they are in the bowl where you can use them.
Right.
It's maybe like a cooldown system.
Yeah. It's sort it's a very weird cooldown system.
Yeah.
But spend things and put them somewhere else.
And honestly, even like Lords of Waterdeep, not to completely derail, you can own different worker placement spots. And then when people use it, instead of paying the bank, they pay you.
Yeah.
And like even just that little shift like kind of changes the dynamic of what those resources are doing.
Yeah, it's way more fun when they go to a... Or like Barrage. I think Barrage is the one, the waterfall one.
I don't know that one.
Where... it's like there's waterfalls and dams and the water pools up at the top and then it goes through the dam and stuff happens and then it goes to a lower pool but now it can go to a lower dam.
Oh, okay.
And it just keeps flowing through. Anyway, that's another example, I guess.
Sure.
In practice when we're playing it, I really like that you themed it as this is kind of the waste product, the byproduct stuff, because it feels like that. There's not many games where you complete your thing and it's like, oh, all these resources I used are now, I have to plan around that and be like a sustainable business. And it really feels like... you have to think about like how you're affecting the environment of this game.
Well, and really, like it comes back to the petition actions too, because you know the more you have in your exhaust, the less you can do with petition actions.
Yeah,
yep.
The nobles don't want anything to do with
you. Yeah, and that's a like easy way to get points. Like if you have a favorite card that's worth 1 point, and someone does a petition action, it's like, oh man, they're doing the green one. I could have gotten 3 extra points.
Yeah,
had I just had a clean system.
Yeah,
and it's just like, oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, sort of an environmental message.
Yeah, maybe subtext. Someday there'll be like the environmental
thanks
version
to Sprocket
of this
Forge.
Game. Yeah.
Yeah. Goodness, I guess I need a takeaway.
Too. Yeah, I was just gonna say, what's your takeaway from your game?
I mean, I have a lot of takeaways, honestly. I guess. One of the things I really enjoyed that developed later in the game, or I should say later in the design process, was the mana recycling system. And what I like about it is that, first of all, it's a passive trade system. And just
so
to clarify,
you're talking about like when you grab someone else's exhaust
piles. Yes. So there's a mechanic in this game called recycle. When you take a recycle, when you resolve a recycle symbol, you get to take a exhaust from someone else's mana. So this helps both of you because their waste is going away, so their factory is becoming cleaner, which is good, and you're getting a mana that you presumably need. It's kind of like a wild mana, except it's dependent on what they have available in the exhaust. And so you both get something, but there are a couple of really nice things to the system. First of all, it's passive. You don't need to negotiate. I really like passive trade systems. Second, it is beneficial in a way that doesn't seem to... There are some players who do not like to do things that help other players, and they will actually go out of their way and sabotage their own game to avoid helping anyone else at all.
Oh, yeah.
And this doesn't seem to trigger that instinct in them as much.
Interesting.
Possibly because I keep hearing people say this. They frame it as stealing the mana from their neighbor. I always sort of laugh inside when I hear people saying, Charlie, you said this.
Did I?
Or, yeah, no, maybe. Trevor, maybe you said it earlier on in this. No, I think it was you, Charlie. you know, I'm going to steal this mana.
Which is actually not mana you were going to use, and it would have,
Well, I guess in the case of the kobolds, I could actually use that, but that's a special case. But
well, and it also is a target, you get the choice between either neighbor.
Yeah.
And you're going to pick the person who's in last place, probably.
Either last or who has the element you need.
Unless it's
someone who.
Unless it's Charlie and I'm 5 points behind him and he decides I'm winning anyway.
I knew you were going to win by at least 10 points.
Yeah, at least 10 points.
Yeah.
Ended up like 12, 13.
But the other nice thing about the recycle mechanic is that procedurally, it's very clean. And what I mean by that is it is a single motion that you take you grab the mana and you put it in your mana pool.
Yeah.
It's a single motion that benefits both players.
Oh, sure.
Rather than, say, the typical way that these exchanges go is, okay, I give this thing... Maybe I give this thing to you, or
and then I take it,
and then you take it, or I give this thing, and then you take this other thing. It's just very clean. I just take the thing.
Two sheep for two wood. Two sheep for two wood. Anyone? Yeah. Two sheep for two wood. Okay.
And it's
nobody's taking that, dude.
No, that's fine.
Like I guess this maybe this sounds kind of weird, but it's a motion where I like what's happening because I'm taking the thing. It's the thing I want. You like that I'm taking the thing.
Right.
Whereas in a trade situation, it's, okay, well, I'm giving the thing away. I don't like giving the thing away.
Right.
I like that I'm getting a thing, but every part of the interaction, both people are very happy with.
Well, and I mean, it's like what we were talking about before with studies in sorcery. You are getting rid of a liability for someone.
Yeah.
And you are getting an asset.
Yes.
And so, like, while it's not one person getting both things, you actually still create that same feeling. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is great. Okay, yeah, now, my exhaust is even down lower than I last saw. This is perfect.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I guess to summarize, I think my takeaway is this type of interaction where I take something you don't want and that I do want.
Yeah.
And that it's very simple. It feels very good for both players.
Oh, yeah.
Let's have more of those.
And it's not a co-op. Cool. Situation.
Yeah.
Like it's still competitive.
Yeah. Let people take other people's liabilities and use them as assets.
Yeah. There you go.
Just take it.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Take someone's car. It's just a liability, most people think. And then it's an asset for me because I have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And it works this way because it's only one resource token. Usually resources represent one thing only. But because of the location of them on the table, it is useful in one space and
negative
useful.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. The meaning is location based. So by taking it, you're changing the meaning without having to do anything complicated.
Yeah. It's very clean and elegant. I like it.
Yeah. Or dirty and polluting. Depends on where it is. Yep. Well, cool. I think that's Sprocket Forge. Congrats, Ananda.
Congrats, man.
Published game, and yeah, it was great. So tune in next time for our final wrap-up episode on Engine Builders.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.